Welcome to Planet Geo, the podcast where we talk about our amazing planet, how it works, and why it matters to you.
Hey, how are you?
I can't just not laugh looking at you sometimes. You're looking particularly confused, and I think it's because you had your big NASA panel set up. You have three screens. You got how many keyboards do you have?
You caught me looking up at one of my screens.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So yeah, it's not confusion this time.
Okay.
But I will say, you and I got mad at each other today, this morning, and you know what I'm talking about? I was upset with you because you were upset with me because you think I am technologically illiterate. And you're like, oh my gosh, I sent this guy the link and he can't open it. And
links stymie, Chris Boyce, despite the NASA screen.
This is not true. It's just not
well,
true.
Well, I think it's a rare episode where we don't have at least some technological difficulty between the two of us. So
I know. That's why I'm always on early. You know, I'm like, I know I'm going to have difficulty here because the partner that's setting me up, I think you're setting me up on... No, you are setting me up on purpose to fail, and I don't appreciate that.
Every once in a while, I'll send you the wrong link.
Yeah.
Like Andrew
you get
said,
mad at me.
Like Andrew said in this interview, he says, wow, you guys have been doing this for how long? You guys cannot get your technology down.
He did call us a train wreck.
Well, this time it was probably my fault for copying the wrong link or something, but I think we got to sort it out. We'll get it ironed out. I think by year six, we'll probably get this ironed out, don't you think? Three more years.
This is 4 years for us. We've been doing this for, that's a long time.
Well, we still can't figure it out. This is the first, this is kind of a fun interview. Andrew DeWitt, who is a close friend of both of ours. And we chose to interview Andrew, I think, Chris, let me pitch this, I think, because you pitched this idea, I think, initially, but we've kind of been having this revolving conversation about, for a long time, about interviewing people in industry, and we didn't really know how to get into it, like how to start to tackle it. And so we decided to interview Andrew, who is a close friend of both of ours and works in a geoscience adjacent industry. So Andrew's a director at Atwell LLC, which is an environmental consulting group. He's been in the environmental consulting world for most of his career as a professional, I think. Andrew has a master's degree. Him and I graduated high school together. We took your summer science class together. And that was really a trip that solidified for me and initiated for him the sort of passion for geoscience and the sort of career trajectory, I think. And so that's why we chose to interview Andrew, who we both know quite well, very well, and are close friends with in this episode, to kind of lead into the industry geologist perspective, which we'll have a whole series coming up, and we'll continue to interview people in the geoscience industry about their perspectives.
I think that's going to come across in the interview that we are all very, very comfortable with each other. It's going to be like a kind of a different interview from that standpoint. I think it's a good thing. But our other interviews coming up, our next interview in this series is going to include Erica Dahlman, and it that takes a little bit of a more of a normal tone for the way that our interviews go.
Yeah, that's right. And so Andrew, you know, provides a very different perspective. Like I said, he's been in the environmental consulting world. He's moving up the ranks quite quickly in the environmental consulting world, worked on some really cool projects, including the Keystone Pipeline project, which he talks briefly about, and is now kind of a regional, if not national, leader in the offshore wind farms, solar farms, like really getting into this alternative energy space from an environmental consulting perspective. So it's a really interesting view of the geosciences. But Chris, I have a question for you. So Andrew also teaches the summer science class with you now. So he's a co-instructor on this summer science trip, but he's also on the school board at Huttsville High School. So is he technically your boss? Does that make him your boss? How does this work?
Oh, I cannot believe that you just sprung this on me. I suppose this is
in a roundabout way.
Okay. Well, he says he is, like, directly. Like,
you report to him your day-to-day operations.
He actually requires me to call him every morning and tell him what I'm going to do that day. And then he has to either approve or disprove that, you know, that Chris Boyce cannot do that. He's a tyrant, actually.
He's a tyrant. Ruling with an iron fist. That's funny.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But when he gets...
Well, no, I mean, you guys teach, so all that... Oh, that joke to say that you guys teach summer science together and is sort of deeply invested in education and mentorship, and that comes across very much in this interview. So, hey, if you like Planet Geo, go to our website, planetgeocast.com. You can send us an email, planetgeocast@gmail.com. On our website, there's contact us links as well. You can view all of our past episodes, learn about us. You can support us. We really appreciate that. And we also appreciate if you would give us a rating and a review, because that helps the podcast algorithm and helps us get the word about geosciences out there to more people.
Hey, Andrew DeWitt, coming your way.
How many years have you guys been doing this now?
No, we're good.
Have you guys done this before or not? I don't know.
I was telling Andrew that it's rare that an interview goes by without Chris having technical difficulties. You didn't have the link, and I know you have it in three places, Chris. I emailed it to you from Riverside. I sent you a personal email.
True. That's a good point.
And our shared Planet Geo calendar has it in there too.
So the fiasco with my storage on Google Drive, right? And so I cleaned out all my email and I wiped all of it out on accident. So I'm starting from scratch. I have three emails.
Zero. Well, that was not our normal intro to interviews. And the reason is because we have Andrew DeWitt with us, our good buddy, Handy Andy. Andrew, welcome to Planet Geoman.
Okay, that'll be the last time you call me Handy Andy. Let's just put that right out there right now. I am Andrew. Thank you.
What are you going to do about it?
Well, you're right. I can't reach through the screen, but if I could, we'd have some words.
As Chris always says, this is my podcast. I get to say what I want, right, Chris?
That's right. I do.
Not today. No. Not today. I know where both of you are. Right.
Andrew DeWitt, how the heck are you, man?
I'm good. I'm good. It's good to be here. How are you?
It's been 2 weeks since I've seen you, and we spent the 3 weeks together 24/7. So I'm a little I'm going through withdrawal.
A little bit of withdrawal. You know? I hear you.
And I bet you are too. I know. It's got to be hard. So Andrew, I always lead off with this question, and I'm really interested into your insight into it. But tell us your story on how you got into geoscience, because there was definitely an aha moment for me. I know there was with Jesse. Tell us your story.
Yeah. So for me, when I was in high school back in, the early 2000s, I thought I wanted to go to college and pursue a degree in biology because I wanted to be a biology teacher, high school biology teacher. And then in the summer of 2004, I had the opportunity to go on the summer science trip, and we'll talk about that probably in a little bit here, but it was on that trip where I learned a lot about the geology of all the areas we visited out west. That was, for me, an aha moment. I remember being in the Black Hills, up on the top of Little Devil's Tower, and I remember literally, tearing up. The views up there, looking around, hearing about the geology, talking about its importance, the views and everything else, it really took me. And I thought, you know what? There's more to learn here. And I want to learn as much about it as I can. And so for me, the aha moment literally was on Little Devil's Tower. And from there, I decided to take a geology class in high school, taught by Mr. Bullheis here. And
should we call him Mr. Bullheis for the whole episode?
We probably should.
Do we need to call him Mr. Bullheis?
I think we should. Can't. So I took the high school geology class, and after that I said, you know what, I want to learn more. And I went to Grand Valley and got my bachelor's degree in geology with a minor in biology, and went from there. So that was my aha moment. It was in the Black Hills.
Quick question about that, Andrew. When did you tear up? Did you tear up when the sun came up, or did you tear up when the sun was already up then and we just started talking about how this came to be? How did the Black Hills form? At what point? What was it for you?
So for me, it was the view. And Chris, back then, we did that hike during the day. So we did not sunrise hike. So now we take the students, we get up at 3 a.m. and we hike up and watch the sunrise, and that's amazing. And that gets me too, even to this day. But back then it was the view during the day. But for me, it was always the view. It was like, wow, this is sweet. This is cool. It had been the first time I'd ever been out west, and I knew I wanted to know more.
So Andrew, another question about that, because I know that we journaled, right? We had to journal during, we were on the same trip, the same summer science trip. We actually shared a tent. That's kind of where we became quite good friends, I think. And have you reread your journal from summer science? Do you still have it, your high school summer science journal? Or did we turn those in? Because I don't remember. Because I remember you talking about journaling at Little Devil's Tower.
Yeah. So a lot of times when we get up to the top of a hike, wherever we are, we the students journal. And so, when I was a student, I journaled, and I remember I remember being very sappy. I haven't read it recently, but I remember saying this was a really cool, really special feeling, really cool opportunity, and that it was going to probably change my life. And it certainly did.
Interesting.
So, Andrew, walk us forward, like walk us through your career up until this point. Like, can you give us the quick summary? I mean, Chris and I know this, but give us the quick summary and maybe give us your like evolution in thinking about geoscience throughout that process.
Sure. When I went to Grand Valley, I thought I wanted to be a biology teacher when I was in high school. But when I got to Grand Valley, I thought I wanted to be a geology or earth science teacher. So I took all the education classes. I started going down a biology minor track because in Michigan, you got to have a minor in order to teach. And it was probably a year and a half in where I thought, you know what, teaching, while I like it, it's not something that I want to do for a career. I knew there were other opportunities for me to be impactful to students. And there certainly are, and I certainly do that today. But I decided to go into geology with the intention of becoming a consultant. But my options, I wanted to keep my options
Okay, because you lost time, right? Because you were going into education. So you lost about a year, didn't you?
I did. Yep, I lost a year. But looking back at what I do today, that biology background is actually really important. So I probably wouldn't have done it any other way. When I was at Grand Valley, I had a lot of opportunities to do undergraduate research. I presented at conferences, I helped write papers, and I took advantage of some opportunities that kind of came my way. One of the things that really kind of sparked my interest was an undergraduate research project that I did at a local river. We were mapping basically substrate temperature anomalies in a local stream and looking at how groundwater interacts with surface water and what it means for temperature and how temperature could affect aquatic organisms and fish and things like that. So after Grand Valley, I decided to go to Missouri State and study basically rivers, fluvial geomorphology. While I was there,
Andrew loves to say fluvial geomorphologist. And if you ask him, Andrew, what are you? I am a fluvial geomorphologist. He loves to say that. And then students like
kind of thing.
He put him on a pedestal.
But I must say, it's a cool word. I would call myself that too. It's way cooler than geochemist or, you know, igneous petrologist. Quite the ring to it.
To be clear, I'm not a fluvial geomorphologist, but I have studied fluvial geomorphology.
Okay, all right.
So I like to say it. But part of what I knew if I wanted a job in Michigan that's related to earth science or geology, I had to have a background in water of some sort, and I had to have some understanding of sediment transport. And so to me, fluvial geomorphology covers both those things. So it's really studying rivers, how they behave, why they behave that way, et cetera. And so I had a research assistantship there through an environmental institute. It's called the Ozarks Environmental and Water Resources Institute. And they funded my master's, and I had opportunities to do basically consulting work while I was going to school, which was a really powerful thing for me.
I guess I don't know, Andrew. We went through this process much at the same time, right? And so we talked frequently throughout this. I was definitely not that insightful or like forward looking. Did you go into, like, when you were looking for graduate schools, did you look for one on rivers specifically because you knew you wanted to work on water coming back to Michigan? And like, why rivers and not lakes? Why not some other groundwater type problem? Like, how did you sort of sift through the options available to you?
Yeah, no, good question. I did. I knew I wanted to study rivers and watersheds. And there was a part of me that kind of thought about doing like river restoration work at some point.
Because
I knew that was a career, particularly out west and in other, you know, regions. But I knew I wanted to keep my options open, right? I had some advice from others that said, listen, if you're studying water and you're studying sediments and you're studying earth system processes related to those things, you're going to have some pretty broad opportunities. And to me, it made sense. And the other thing about river science that I love so much is that you can watch it happen, right?
Yeah,
you can see what a river looks like before a flood and come back after a big flood event and watch how it changed and watch how that stuff happens on a human time scale and apply those things and those observations and that data on geologic time scale, which is also important. So yeah, I don't know if that answers your question, but that was kind of my mindset. And I love rivers. I like to fish. I like to be on the water. You know, here in Michigan, we've got a lot of them. We've got a lot of lakes and things. So yeah, that had something.
Lakes are amazing, but there's something about moving water. I agree completely with you that, and the time scales of change are, as you said, like totally obvious. And we've been doing this series on rivers, largely led by Chris, but in part because they're super interesting and they're super impactful. Everything from levees to contamination to disappearing streams, all that stuff. Like, it's super important to understand.
Okay, Andrew, that's awesome. I want to put a pin in the fluvial geomorphology discussion and come back to it a little bit later on and talk specifically about maybe interactions between humans and rivers. So we'll come back to a more detailed geologic discussion on that topic. But before we do that, I want to ask you about your job today, like your job specifically. So can you describe your job? And then I'm really interested also in how your degree plays into what you do today. Did your degree prepare you for the job you do? Or if you had a redo, would you perhaps pursue a different degree for the job that you do now? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. Okay. I'll kind of take it in kind of pieces here. So my job today, I am one of two directors in the environmental group at a company called Atwell. Atwell is a full service consulting, engineering, and construction management company. I've been here for about 3 years. Before I came here, I was at a global company within an office based here in Michigan. I started off my career doing field geology and contaminated site management type work. So groundwater monitoring, soil sampling, remediation type work. I did that for a short bit, and I had an opportunity after that to work on some pretty large and complex projects from a permitting perspective. And I started off doing oil and gas permitting and impact analyses, and then from there did some mining work, telecommunications work, and then slowly over time got more and more into renewables. So fast forward now, I've been at Atwell for almost 3 years now, and now I'm a director here. My day-to-day is, frankly, I spend a lot of time on the phone. So I, as director, and you can ask my wife, she's like, do you ever not talk on the phone? Because I work from home. I work from home here, but and she's off for the summer. She works at the school. But anyway, my job as director of our group is to make sure that we're staffing our teams appropriately, that we're pursuing the right opportunities, that we're being strategic in terms of what clients we want to work for, what projects we want to pursue, and just making sure that we're continuing to grow at a sustainable rate while at the same time giving opportunities to our staff. So we're doing a ton of power and energy projects, primarily commercial scale solar projects and also large scale wind facilities. I'm also working on some offshore wind projects. I started doing that when I was at my previous firm, but since I've come here, we've been supporting another client. So it's been a really rewarding experience. But my day-to-day is not in geoscience. My day-to-day now is in management, leadership, and business development.
Okay. So, and what about your degree? So because it's not in geoscience, your degree is in geoscience, you don't do geoscience. If you had a do-over, would you do it differently? And if so, why or why not?
Yeah, I don't think I would. So you guys know me pretty well. I don't really have a lot of regrets. I make the most of what I got. And I think that a geoscience degree is so valuable. And Chris, we talk about this with our summer science students, right? The skills that you develop as a geoscientist, in my opinion, and I'm obviously a little biased here, but in my opinion, are unlike a lot of skills that you develop in other kind of lines of science, if you will. You know, we are,
as geoscientists, can you lean into that?
So in geoscience, we're collecting data, we're making observations in the field, and sometimes we're asked to draw conclusions that are not always from point A to point B, right? Sometimes there's things missing in our data sets or things missing in our observation, right? And so it's really a delicate dance between science and art. And totally. I think the critical thinking skills that you develop as part of that process are really important.
That's a great answer. I mean, I like that a lot. But how, I guess, can you expand on that? From, we have a lot of students or people who are just deciding whether they want to go get a degree in geoscience who listen to this podcast. Can you make it more explicit? Like, you and I, we graduated at a slightly different time. Like, has it changed from your view? You're hiring people now. Do you value the geoscience degree, as you just stated, when you're looking at two resumes side by side? Does it factor in? And if so, how? I don't know. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, since I'm a geoscientist and because I said what I just said, right? I do give a little preferential treatment.
Well, I feel the exact same way. And I think you're right, but I just want to, I don't know if everybody feels that way. And so how do your colleagues who aren't geoscientists feel about these hiring decisions? Curious about that.
Yeah. No, here's the deal. I'll be honest with you guys. Degrees are really important, right? Especially when we're talking about specialty kind of roles within the organization. That's really important. But sometimes, almost all the time more important to me. I mean, I interviewed 3 people this week. Last week, I interviewed 5 people. We're constantly interviewing people, constantly growing. More important to me is passion. If people are passionate about what we do, that's huge. If people are gritty, you know, if they can handle a little bit of adversity in their resumes or the conversations that we have, kind of demonstrate that. Those things are really, really important to me too as a hiring person. And then the last thing is just, you know, speaking of resumes, right? Just demonstrating in a resume that you've done some things that are kind of above and beyond, whether it's volunteer work or whether it's undergraduate research, right? Like most colleges or universities don't require a lot of undergraduate research. But if I see a resume that shows that someone has kind of gone above and beyond, that says a lot. And so the advice that I give to young aspiring scientists is do those things. Do those things when you're young. Do those things when you're a college freshman, sophomore, and demonstrate and be able to talk about those things. And that goes a long, long way when it comes to hiring good people. Because I'll take people who are gritty and passionate over someone who might have the perfect degree from the perfect university with the best GPA imaginable, right?
Okay, I have a follow-up question on this because I'm really interested in something, Andrew. I want to know then, like you and I deal with this a lot on the trip that we co-teach, Summer Science, okay? We have kids that are passionate about science, and what recommendations do you have then for people that want to go into a niche field? You have some strange hires. I mean, you hire bat biologists and, you know, just really, really specialized people. What's your recommendation on people looking for their degree that want to then work in their degree, if that makes sense?
Yeah. So first of all, I think the first, and I tell this to our kids too, to our students, right? Pick a field that you're passionate about, but also understand that flexibility is important. And just like it did for me, and just like it may have for you, Jesse, and certainly like it did for you, Chris, like when you're 17 years old, 18 years old, your idea of the future is much different than what reality will be, right? And so my advice to those students is don't be afraid of staying a little intentionally broad. Don't be afraid of change. Some people are like, If I decide on one thing, I can never change my mind. The reality of the situation is most of us are going to have multiple jobs in our career. I mean, as educators, maybe that's not as true. But for the rest of the world, most people have 3 or 4 or 5 jobs. And that's okay. And as long as you're happy and you're doing what you're doing and you're making good choices, like there's nothing wrong with that in my opinion. I don't know. Did I answer your question?
I think so. You're just saying don't be afraid to follow what you want, but also don't be afraid to leave it broad. Is that
That's exactly right. And I knew, Chris, that I wanted to be in geology or science in some way, shape, or form. But I also knew that in order to have a job in that field, I didn't want to pigeonhole myself. So studying water and sediment and studying the environment and things like that and anthropogenic or human-induced causes of change and disturbance, those are all things that I knew would apply to multiple different opportunities in the job field. And so that's what I did, right? So that's my advice.
And your point too about when you're 18 and not really knowing what you want. I mean, I knew one thing when I was 18, and that was that I did not want to be a teacher. That was the last thing I was dragged kicking and screaming into this profession. So yeah, I didn't know anything when I was 18 years old.
It's a great segue to I have a question about the next step. So we've kind of been talking about like undergrad. How do you decide about undergrad degrees and stuff? This is maybe 3 parts, but I want to talk to you on graduate school a little bit. Like, how did your master's degree serve you personally, Andrew? Number two, how do you view PhDs versus master's degrees versus 1-year masters, like applied masters, internships? Like, how do you view those differently? And 3, like, has that changed since you and I were going to grad school, do you think, at all? Because we get
like your multi.
If a question's not long-winded, it's not worth asking.
It's kind of like repeat after me. You have to keep it short when you're doing a repeat after me with Andrew. You know, it's like maybe 2-word repeats.
He's been on the phone all day talking to people.
I have been. I literally had 10 meetings today. It's bizarre. So anyway, no, I got your question. I was just going to give you a hard time because, man, that's a lot. It's a lot to unpack. That's, so one.
It's a lot. Yeah. It keeps it light question, and keeps it confusing.
He's doctory. Yeah. Not welcome to my world, Andrew. I know. Doctory. Like,
just tell me what you want to know. So one, all right, how has my degree served me personally? Well, it served me personally in the ways that we already kind of talked about. Yeah, my master's. So, excuse me, like I said, my undergraduate research, I started doing some work in rivers and I'm like, hey, let's continue this. This is important for the reasons we already talked about. But also beyond that, my research assistantship and the funding that I got, it allowed me to work for an institute, right? Where we were consulting with different agencies and different kind of doing small projects on how, you know, watersheds are impacted by different things, right? So we did like a study on how fields applied with biosolids could affect runoff water quality, for example, right? And so we were doing science around that and using that science to answer some pretty tough questions to inform some decision making, right?
So it sounds like that was kind of a linear, your various steps a little bit between your masters. Like some people, I guess if you did a master's in volcanology, would you be where you are today, do you think? Is kind of another, like how much does the degree, the title matter versus what you did it in, I suppose? That's kind of what
That's a good question. That's a really good
question.
Thank you,
Chris. And short also.
Look at you go. I know. Well, it was to the point. Yes. Go, Andrew.
So to answer that question, I think now is 1B, and I'll get to number two and then number three after this.
Thank you.
So speaking of linearity here. So that's a hard one for me to answer. And here's why. Like, I love volcanoes, but I never thought that I wanted to do like volcanology or research. I mean, you like research in volcanology. You guys have interviewed some really impressive people with some really impressive resumes on volcanology. I don't know that that was something that I thought was ever an option for me, and it wasn't really an interest from a career perspective for me. Now,
and there's not that many volcanologists. There's not that many like professional volcanologists in the world, right? So like, it's super interesting. It's like studying dolphins if you're a biologist. Like, how many people in the world study dolphins professionally? There's probably a lot of people who want to go to grad school for it, but like, there's not a big great career path for it. So anyway, it's a tension.
And that was,
I think,
and that was it is, and that's why I said earlier on, like, it's okay to be intentionally broad. As an undergrad and even as a master's student, I can tell you this, when I'm hiring for jobs in consulting, a master's degree is very, when I look at that on a resume, it's meaningful, right?
Okay. So it is a good degree to have.
It is a good degree to have because it shows that you've completed a process, right? It shows that you know how to collect data, you know how to understand previous research, you know how to do science, and you know how to write about it and communicate about it. That's
and
what
you know how to work
consultants.
Independently as well.
That's exactly right. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hold on, we haven't gotten even to two yet. I mean, come on. Chris, 1C? Are we interrupting with question 1C?
Yeah, let's go. 1C. Yep.
Well, two was how you view a PhD versus a master's versus a bachelor's. I would put some weight into a master's degree over a bachelor's degree for sure, especially in our line of work. And a PhD, from my perspective, is probably not needed. And here's the deal. And Jesse and listeners, like, no offense here, right? But like, people with a PhD are very specified, right? They're very specific in what they do.
Andrew, there are a lot of things.
We know your audience, Chris.
I think what you're
in the house right now, and
just come out and say it. Overeducated. Just say overeducated is the word we're trying. You're trying to beat around the bush here, but yes, you're right.
I don't know if that's the overeducated. I mean, the point is you do a lot of things on your own, right? You have a team of folks that you're collaborating with, grad students, and you have students that are supporting you and other colleagues. But like, in order for us to be successful in consulting, like we got to have 10 people all rallying behind the same thing, and we got to be able to do it and communicate it effectively. And sometimes, again, no offense here, PhDs, like they're focused on what they want to focus on. And sometimes those skill sets don't translate as directly. Does that make sense?
I see. Yeah,
it makes perfect sense. And I also want to put out there that I only like to pick on my doctor. Okay. And Jesse is my doctor. All the other doctors out there, you guys are awesome. But the one that I am most acquainted with is not so much. And so, but he's mine. And so I get to do
struggling.
This. Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
good qualification, Chris.
Yes. I don't know.
Okay. Let me get us back on track here. So the question three was.
What is question three? He lost me at question two.
Would I change anything? Would I change anything about what I do? And my answer is
no. The question was, how has that changed since we went to school? Like, how? Question number three is, how has, like, has it changed since you and I, you know, were applying to graduate school? Like, has the system that you're in changed in the last, you know, 10, 15 years? And in the future, like, give us a little bit more forward looking, or is a master's always going to be useful from your view? Or is it potentially changing? Because there's all these new degrees coming out. Like, I'm interested because there's like earth and planetary science degrees that you can get a planetary science major. You can get a PhD in, you know, sustainability. Like, what? I don't know.
Well, Jesse, let me interrupt you a second. Okay. Then let's change the question, because who cares about what it was like when you guys came out? Let's just ask this question, because it's a really good question. And just for time's sake, let's jump right to that. The three of us, we've talked about this in detail. Whenever we get together, this kind of comes up almost always. And it is,
yeah,
you know, the geoscience brand has a lot of like subsets to it, like sustainability, environmental science. We have hard up geology, you have geoscience, you have planetary science, you have hydrology. What are your thoughts about all of these things? And, you know, like, is there a best fit?
That's such a loaded question.
It can be very confusing. It is. To the listener, like, it can be very, I get confused. Like, I'm in this industry. I watch departments be rebranded from geology departments to planetary science departments to sustainability schools. Like, it's confusing, like, what's actually changing and what's actually new and what's different and how they compare to each other. So I'm as confused as everybody about this.
You know, I mean, you got geology programs that are being rebranded into geography programs now.
Totally.
It is very confusing. Okay, Andrew, take the question. You have the floor.
Yeah. So to me, and when I hire folks, like I just said before, it's a good question, but when I'm looking at resumes, it's not as important maybe as some people think. And I know that's hard for an educator to hear. It might be hard for a student to hear, but to me,
Can I interrupt on that, Andrew? Cause I want to, what advice would you want me to give students? It sounds like your advice might be just like, don't stress about it so much. Cause that would be welcome to me. I don't really care what
work
the degree
hard.
Is. Like,
okay,
take
work
classes
hard.
You're interested
yeah,
in.
Yeah, work and, hard. Exactly. Work hard, right? Be curious and find something you're passionate about. And you know what? So here's what, 90% of the work that we do is in renewable energy. There's not a lot of degrees in renewable energy consulting. Like, it just doesn't exist. I mean, it probably does somewhere. So forgive me if I'm wrong there. But my point is, that's not as important to me. Me knowing what I know about geoscience and what I think is still being taught in geology departments across the country, it's a solid degree that allows students to build a lot of great skills around problem solving. And to me, that's what consulting is. It's solving problems for our clients. It's helping them navigate complex regulatory environments. And that's not a cut and dried thing. So to me, less important is the specifics about the degree, and more important is the ability of somebody to demonstrate that they just know how to get stuff done and they know how to think critically in that respect.
That's a great answer. I really like that. And I think, you know, there's a lot of educators, Chris, I don't know, weigh in here, but I feel like there's a lot of educators that are looking for guidance because the geoscience industry is sort of changing underfoot, right? And I don't have my finger on the pulse of where, you know, new mineral lithium mining companies, what their concerns are, right? Like, so it's important to get this feedback, I think.
Yeah. And let me be clear, right? Like, I'm not doing geoscience every day, like I mentioned. And I don't have a whole slew of geoscientists on my team, right? So this is just my opinion as a director at a, you know, consulting firm. But I think that there probably is a place for folks that are hydrologists. There certainly is, right? Especially if you want to do contaminated site management or look at groundwater interactions and with surface water or mining waste and all sorts of, like, there's certainly needs for those individuals. And those individuals should make sure that they're aligning their class choices and their kind of degrees with what they kind of want to do. My point is, we're doing a lot of new stuff. We're doing a lot of stuff. Like, frankly, when it comes to renewable energy permitting, for example, there are certain jurisdictions that just don't even understand or have the sophistication yet to know how to get these jobs, to get these projects permitted, right? There are townships and municipalities that have no ordinance for solar development. So this is all very, very new. So take that for what it is as well, and just know that it's pretty complex. And so my opinions kind of reflect my experience.
That makes sense. Hey, I want to throw something at you here, Andrew. So we're going to call this halftime in this episode. And for the halftime show, I would like you to answer this question. What is your funniest Jesse Reimink story?
Okay, no, we need to filter this very hard. I'm glad I have editing control here.
Oh my goodness. Funniest. Well, there's so there were a lot of, there was a time in high school, Jesse and I have known each other since what, third grade, Jesse? And we were locker partners, right, in fifth grade. And we didn't get real close until high school. I mean, we played sports together and things, but we didn't get real close till high school and until summer science. But I think in high school, there was a time when you got mono, potentially. And we all know that mono is the kissing disease.
Yes.
And, where is this going? And so I'm not going to share too much more out of that, but there were some funny things with Jesse and who he may or may not have been kissing in high school. And we'll just call it that. Yeah. We'll just leave it at that.
Let's put it this way. There was a big family outbreak of mono at the Christmas, you know, the annual Christmas party. And a bunch of us were all laid up with mono in the new year. I had to miss basketball games because of that. I remember being so pissed off. And then I had to wear the Kevlar pads. So is it your kidneys that get inflamed with mono or something, or you can't get hit anyway?
Yes. Or is it your liver?
Or your liver? One of them. I don't remember which one. But yeah, anyway.
Anyway, that's really too bad that you're filtering so much, because I think I would appreciate some name drops here.
We'll leave that for another time.
I guess we will. Okay. Halftime is over. I think that was a good halftime show. Thanks, Andrew. We appreciate that. So let's talk about your specialty, Andrew. Fluvial geomorphology. I want to talk about, or I want you to talk about, some of the ways that humans have affected river systems.
Qualifier here, Andrew. Tread lightly, because Chris has been on the river and streams thing for like going on a year now. So you better tread lightly and say the right things.
I want you to
like lump me into the fluvial geomorphology category. Can I be an honorary inductee to this, please?
For a little bit. Yeah. So, but I don't know.
Human interactions, you can throw dams into it, whatever you want, but let's get into that.
I mean, how much time do we have?
No, we have as much time as you want. I want a good answer.
We don't have as much time.
Well, Jesse has a heart out, but you and I can talk. So, yeah. You know.
So, I mean, there's so many different things. So, some of the obvious things are things like impervious surfaces, right? Impervious surfaces are surfaces that doesn't allow water to infiltrate, you know, the ground in a way that it otherwise would if that surface wasn't there. So things like parking lots and shopping malls and neighborhoods and things like that, right? So the idea here is if you add more impervious surfaces to a watershed, that water that would normally hit the ground infiltrate into the shallow groundwater and get to streams and rivers, right? Instead, that water may be more rapidly diverted into a stream or a river, and that changes what we call the stream hydrograph. So the time between a huge or any type of rain event and the time that a surface water body reacts to that rain event is different when impervious surfaces increase, right? So that's just one example. And that has all kinds of implications for...
And say, this is a strange thing that I'm going to say, but I'm going to pull you out of the weeds a little bit, Andrew, and can I interpret what you just said there a little bit? Because Chris is usually pulling me out of the weeds, but let me just simplify it really simple. And when a big storm hits, usually in a natural way, the river will increase gradually. So if you look at over time, the water flow, that's hydrograph. If I'm remembering back to my undergrad geology days, hydrograph is like the river flow over time. And so that'll increase gradually and decrease gradually. But what you're saying is with all these impermeable surfaces, it'll spike up. The hydrograph will like spike up and you'll get more flooding. Is that one of the results here?
Oh my gosh.
That's right.
Okay. Hold on.
Not only that. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Jesse, can we just say this then? That all these impervious surfaces cause water to get to the rivers faster. Rivers flood more frequently. So we're having 500-year flood events way more frequently than every 500 years because, in large part, because of all these impervious surfaces and water's getting to its destination much, much faster.
That works too.
Hey, there we go. What do you think, Jesse? Was that better?
It was the same, I think, is what I said. But you know.
Maybe not. But no, but that's exactly right. You guys are exactly right, and that has implications for how the stream behaves, what it looks like. Right? You'll see streams in these environments that have abandoned their floodplains, and they're very much incised because there's more water than they're used to conveying. That kind of stuff. Other examples, things that humans have done to affect rivers, are things like farming practices. Over human time scales, the Midwest of the United States looked a lot different, you know, 150 years ago, 200 years ago than it does now. And those land use practices could change the way rivers behave. Things like deforestation, things like metropolitan areas where we have flood walls, you know, things like that. These rivers can't behave the way they otherwise naturally would. So those are all sort of the physical ways that streams can kind of change based on human behavior.
Can I ask a follow-up then to this? And what is your favorite river and what is the most interesting river you know of?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I've seen a lot of rivers. This is going to sound like such a Andrew answer. This is going to sound like you guys are going to make fun of me for this. So here's the thing. So I did my master's thesis research on the James River in Southwest Missouri. It's not a super, I mean, there are certain portions of it that are absolutely beautiful, right? But it's not known to be a really pretty, really unique river. But to me, it's special because my wife and I got married. We had almost no money, right? We moved to Missouri. And seriously, our entertainment was like collecting data on my river, right? Like that's what we did. And so it's special to me because of that. And the Missouri Ozarks, the Ozarks in general, are really underrated when it comes to the river. I mean, there's the current river, the Jack's Fork River, the Buffalo River, some of these wild and scenic rivers that frankly are really underrated, but absolutely beautiful. We would spend a lot of time canoeing and kayaking these rivers and they're absolutely gorgeous. So
I mean,
those
would
be my top ones.
Sir, I feel the same way about the Acosta Gneiss Complex where I did my PhD. They are ugly rocks, but they're special to me. They're special. Okay, Andrew.
He's always got to bring it back to Acosta. We're talking about rivers, and now he brings in the oldest,
ugliest
rock
on the planet.
No, I think we should talk
about zircons and uranium led geochronology, right? Isn't that the title of this episode? Okay.
Andrew, I'm not going to make fun of you for that answer because I so appreciate that answer. It's about, you know, the memories and connections that you have to that river. And I think that's something that a lot of people can relate to. So that's great.
And is there a river, I don't know, most interesting maybe, or one that like, if there's a news article about it, you're always going to click on it either locally where you live now or like, you know, nationally or something, one you've worked on previously?
Yeah. I mean, the Yellowstone River is an obvious one because we go see it every summer. And last summer, they had, what was it, Chris, a 500-year event, and it was absolutely devastating. And I think this past summer, there was a train derailment that had a spill into the Yellowstone. And I mean, the Yellowstone River is absolutely gorgeous, and it's very pretty, and it's very sensitive ecologically and very unique geologically with the water, you know, falls and things like that, and Yellowstone Lake and stuff like that. So I don't know. That's probably the other one.
And it's the longest undammed river in the United States. That's crazy.
Factoid for you.
On that note, can I ask the next question, Chris? Can I take this one about kind of about summer science?
Yeah, go.
And I don't know the answer to this, Andrew. I'm very curious what your answer is. So you teach the summer science class, the one that we really became friends on, and Chris was teaching it. He taught us geology out there. You now teach it with Chris. And I was shocked about this because if you would have asked me 2 weeks ago, how long have you been teaching it with Chris? I would have said like 2 years maybe. And you told me it was 6 years. Is that right? Have you guys been teaching it 6 years together already?
It's been six. This is our sixth. Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness. Time flies. So you said before you wanted to be a teacher, but you work in environmental consulting and you're moving up the ranks there and you're director now at Atwell. Like, what is the pitch when you were talking to Atwell and you're like, hey, I need to leave to go out west for 3 weeks in the summer to teach high schoolers geology? What was your pitch to them? Like, and how did they receive that? Like, what was that conversation like? Because they're kind of, you know, there's some tension maybe, like, you know, a job and this teaching thing, which is great and obviously an awesome opportunity, but like, how did that go? And how do you view that?
So another 17 part question for me, but I'll go.
Welcome to my world.
I know.
So frustrating.
I can answer it. So here's the deal. This is such an important thing to me personally and to my family. Summer science has been amazing. It's really important to me. And so, you know, I've been with Atwell for almost 3 years now, but I've been doing summer science for six, right? So this was a discussion that came up during the hiring process. I made it clear to them that this is something I don't want to give up. And it's something I'm really passionate about. And I told them why, right? I'm interested in education. I'm interested in making a difference in students' lives, you know, these sorts of things. To them, it was an absolute no-brainer. So they encourage me to do that. I have all the support that I need. But not only that, they fund a portion of the program. So they donate dollars to our general fund. We give scholarships to students who go on to pursue degrees in fields that kind of align with what we do. We also, if there's a student in need, the trip costs $900 per year right now for the students to attend. That covers everything, right? But sometimes there are students that aren't able to do that. And so we cover it for them. So the pitch was easy. And the pitch is, listen, these kids are our future, right? They're going to be our employees. They're going to be our clients. They're going to be our educators. And Atwell understands that value and understands that importance. And so it was a really easy sell for me, frankly. And I'm so lucky to have that support. Yeah.
Were they easily sold?
Very easily.
Yeah.
No brainer at all.
Which I want to say is very interesting to me. It's a touching thing, actually, for me. I get emotional just thinking about it. I love Atwell because of this thing. I really do. I mean, I don't think that there are a lot of companies that would jump on something like this and give that kind of support to. This is support on so many levels that it's hard for me to actually comprehend. I think the biggest thing that they give is they give you. They're willing to let you go. You do some work on the trip. You know, I do most of the bus driving, and when we have internet coverage, you're working, you're doing things and so on. But basically, you're gone for 3 weeks and they give that. They give you up, which is a big give because you're such an important guy, which I want to come back to in a second. But the other thing is the other ways that they give financially, and it's hard for me to comprehend how much I appreciate Atwell for that support. I mean, because I'm an educator, right? I mean, I pour into my students' lives every day, and they're pouring in this way, which I think is just a really cool thing that's not very common in the world today.
Yeah, absolutely. And I couldn't agree with you more. I'm very proud to be there. And it's a difficult thing, right? You see me getting up early and staying up late to work when I need to. But the support that I also have from my amazing team, they understand the importance too, the people that I work with day to day. And that's really meaningful too. People can chip in and pick up where I leave off on things or take things on, you know, and that's really special. So it's just a powerful thing all the way around. And yeah, it's an honor.
That's super cool. So have you, I just thought of this, 6 years, that's long enough for somebody to graduate high school, graduate college even, and be maybe working in the field. Are there people, I know, Chris, there's people you've taught who, a lot of people that you've taught who have gone on to environmental consulting careers. Andrew, have you seen that as well since you've been doing summer science?
I have, absolutely, which is really, really fun. And we have interns at Atwell as well. So we've got, this year we had, so yeah, we
well, that's a part of what they do. That's a part of what, that's an additional thing that Atwell provides to this in terms of support.
Cool. It is. So awesome. This year we had an intern, former summer science intern. He did such an amazing job. It was really good to stay connected with him. And so, yeah, we see that. And then I keep in touch with all these people. And the letters that these students write to us and our leaders, kind of after they've been impacted by this, is actually a really, really special thing too. They get a lot out of it as well.
So Andrew, can we just kind of come back a little bit? I want to come back a little bit to education. And you made a comment about staying broad and the fact that you got, remind me, was it a geoscience degree or an environmental science degree or an earth? I can't remember what your actual undergrad degree was.
Geology degree. Okay. So bachelor's in geology with a minor in biology.
And for staying broad, students often struggle, I think, with this, or at least I get questions about this, like, okay, I'm getting a geoscience degree at Penn State. Like, what is a good minor to maybe have? And some people, you know, want to have the art history minor or the really random, you know, one that they're just interested in, which it sounds like that's great. Is there a benefit to keeping very broad, in your opinion, in that regard? And both for you personally and for you know, students themselves, other students?
Yeah, I think there are some bounds. There probably are some bounds around how broad to be. Like art and geology, you know, there's very little overlap, but biology and geology, certainly chemistry, certainly physics, right? Like, so I don't know. That's my
perspective. And your biology minor, did it, like, it really functionally served you well? It sounds like it would, you know, you're understanding like water and ecosystems, like they go really hand in hand. We're talking about fluvial geomorphology, right, Chris? I mean, we just talked about meanders and plants. They interact really well. So that makes sense. Would chemistry be the same in your field?
I think so. I do.
Okay.
I do think so. And here's why, because there's enough overlap where an understanding of chemistry helps you understand a lot about geology and about magmas and things, right? But it also, same is true with water quality, understanding contaminant migration, things like that. Those are all things that overlap very nicely.
Okay, cool. Chris, so I have a question for Chris, maybe. Chris, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, I would love to field a question. I think. I don't know.
Well, it's not about you. It's not that stressful. Okay. Yeah. 6 years. I'm having trouble getting over the fact that you guys have taught together for 6 years. Because I remember very vividly when Andrew called me and was like, hey, Chris wants me to do summer science. How has Andrew DeWitt changed as an educator in 6 years?
Wow. Be careful. Be careful.
So now I'm going to get sappy. So Andrew is really, really gifted. He could have been a teacher. He could have been a high school geology, you know, geoscience teacher, and he would be phenomenal.
He's more gifted than me teaching when I put students to sleep really well in Yellowstone. So
you do. Does Andrew do the really same? Do.
We should talk about
Andrew
that.
No, Andrew does not. No, Andrew does not.
Okay, good.
He does such a good job, and he always has right off the bat. He was very, very engaging. He has a gift, but he knows this. I think for summer science, and I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but you're kind of scratching an itch too that you have. You're very good at what you do now in your professional day to day and all that. You're a great director for Atwell, but you would have also been a great educator. So he hasn't changed much over the course of the 6 years, other than just simply doing a class like this. You really have to know your stuff. And, you know, the longer you do it, the more you know. So that's really it. You know, you're able to bring in more things. And he brings in experiences from his profession too, which I think is such a cool aspect to Andrew and I working together in summer science. I do the historical geology stuff. I talk a lot about how these places were formed over vast amounts of time. Andrew brings in the practical aspects. He talks about the Keystone Pipeline. He talks about renewables. He talks about careers. And so he is able to take the geoscience field and turn it into something that kids can put their hands around and say, oh, so I really can do this as a job and make a living, and actually a really good living. And so that's what continues to evolve the longer Andrew does this.
I do appreciate that, Chris. Seriously. No, more than you know, I do. I appreciate that. And you've told me that before, so yeah.
I mean, I'm curious about that. It's not surprising knowing you, but it's a little bit surprising because I would imagine, even with my experience in the education field, I would have a hard time plugging into summer science easily, like right away. Like, I'd have a hard time hitting the ground running on summer science with high schoolers. It's just a different, you know, it's a different thing than a lot of things. So, Andrew, I don't know. Yeah,
absolutely. And Chris is spot on. I mean, this definitely scratches an itch for me. I could have continued to pursue a career in education, right? Formally, long-term education, and be a science teacher like Chris is. And so for me, I think it's a way to kind of give back, frankly, to the students, and frankly, give back to the program that really helped shape kind of where I am today. And so that's a pretty special and a pretty powerful thing. But you're exactly right, Jesse. Like, it wasn't easy. That first year, I mean, it's hard. And every year, it continues to be hard to stay relevant, right? To make sure you're updating your content and making sure you're staying up to speed on new things, whether it's new science or new technology or new opportunities for me in consulting or, you know, things
like
that.
Or new high school slang, like what the words That's right. they're saying
oh,
mean.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. This year was eye-opening. This year, like, the dictionary that is being, you know, written here is intense, but it's no, yeah, that's part
that's
of it too.
So funny.
But you know, like it's really just a way for me to scratch that itch, like Chris said. And it's really a way for me to stay engaged and to hopefully have some impact. I mean, honestly, guys, like you guys know me, I'm a sappy guy. Like, I really think that my purpose in life is just to get the most out of people and to help people be the best that they can be and achieve their goals. Right. And so whether that's a 17-year-old student or a client that I work with, or frankly, the 65 people that are on my team, like, I just want people to achieve the best, do the best they can. And this is a way to do that. So it's a powerful thing. It's a special thing.
So on that note, could you help Chris become the best podcast host he could possibly be? Because could
you, that's a lost cause.
Oh my
that's God. A lost
We're
cause.
3 years in and wow. there's a lot of work to be done here. I mean, wow. you know,
like what? Jesse, first, you go first. Tell me how to become a better podcaster.
Well, I mean, you
please.
Just gave a pretty rambly answer to my question. I
don't think that was rambly. Everything I said was relevant.
It was a very good, heartfelt answer. I appreciated it. I appreciate it.
Okay, so Andrew, go ahead. Tell me how to become a better podcaster.
Well, now I feel bad because I'm going to say. No, Chris, you know how I feel about you, man. I love you. I love both of you guys like brothers and beyond. I mean, Christopher, you do like to rant. Let's be honest. You are a ranter.
And like what? What do I rant on? Tell me.
You can be long-winded sometimes. And I know I can be too. But here's the good news. The good news, Chris, is that you've got a good editor.
There's an edit button.
Yeah, there's the edit button. Right?
Okay. All right, Andrew. I have a question. Let's go back to young Andrew, 18 years old, heading off to GVSU. Would you have done anything differently if you had that fresh start?
Yeah, like you guys know me. I don't really have a lot of regrets, you know, and Chris, I feel like you have the same mentality, and part of that and me, frankly, probably comes from you just because of the influence you've had on both me and Jesse over the years, right? But like, I tend to contemplate decisions a lot, and you know this, Chris. When we decided to build this house, this new house that we're in, right? It took me a long time to make some decisions there. When I decided to leave my previous company to go to Atwell, literally, I was recruited for 3 years, and then COVID hit and things changed. And even after I had an offer, it took me a while. So I guess some of the only regrets I have are just related to the timing that it takes me to make some decisions on some things. But part of that's what also makes me who I am. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
I mean, that's a really interesting thing. Like people like you guys who don't really look back and have regrets. I mean, it's a great character trait. Are there decisions you didn't make? Or not decisions you didn't make, opportunities you didn't take, or opportunities you wish maybe you hadn't taken that ended up kind of being a waste of time or something like that. Like even just kind of little things. Cause I think, you know, as students, and I still feel this way too, there's like so many different opportunities. You kind of have a hard time filtering through them. And sometimes it's the decisions you don't make that are quote unquote regrets maybe, or something like that.
Yeah, that's a good question. And Chris, I would actually like your thoughts on this, but for me, like the sum of that is like, you really don't know what you don't know. I could have had some really special opportunities had I decided, just as an example, right, to stay on campus at Grand Valley, right? Maybe things would have been different, or I would have had formed new relationships that would have kind of changed my trajectory or changed my outlook on things. But here's the deal, and I strongly believe this, like if you look back at decisions and think about what could have been, you could drive yourself crazy. So I just don't let myself go there. I'm a happy guy, and that's a genuine thing, and I that's just the way I live my life, you know? So I don't know. I'm getting philosophical here again, but I don't know. That's my perspective.
I agree. I wouldn't answer that any differently because I think, you know, happiness to me is not about getting what you want. It's about wanting what you have. And that's how I feel.
Put that on a t-shirt. There you go.
We're getting a Chris Bullhite's t-shirt made with all sorts of stuff. Erosion happens. What was the other one we just had, Chris? It's hard to stop geology or something like that. Was it? It's hard to stop geology. I think that's what you said the other day.
No, that doesn't sound. Is it really? I don't know. It doesn't sound familiar. I think that's you. But I went into Grand Valley and fell into geology, and that's the direction I went. And now I'm a teacher, right? And I could have just done the easy route and gone right into earth science and teaching, and I would have been teaching when I was 22. I didn't start teaching until I was 25. I don't think that I'd be as effective doing things like summer science or taking my geology class on field trips if I hadn't had those experiences myself. Plus, I cannot imagine Chris Bullhite as a 22-year-old teacher. My gosh, I was not ready for that. No, I needed a couple more years to like mature a little bit. Funny. I wouldn't change it either. So
yeah, and here's the thing too, just real quick, just on the education part and the public education piece. To me, it's so important. Like I've been so deeply impacted by Chris, right, and other teachers and coaches that I had in high school that have really helped me and guided me in ways that have kind of made me who I am today, frankly, right? And so that's part of the kind of giving back thing with education. But also for me, you know, I was on the Education Foundation board in our district for a few years. Now I'm on the school board. I've been on the school board for a year. To me, like just giving back to the community, giving back to the students, and really helping people find the best in themselves and helping kind of influence that is something that's really important to me. That's why I love consultant, you know, being a consultant, because I get to do that, but I also get to lead people, manage people. There's the science side of what we do. There's the financial side of what we do. There's the management side. It really scratches a lot of those different itches. It's not just science. It's not just people management. It's not just finances. It's everything. And to me, it's a really rewarding career.
Every time you talk about it, it sounds like a really sort of a great career, and a great career for you, and a great career for really any, I mean, most people, but rewarding for sure. So Andrew, before we wrap it up, we always end our interviews by asking, what has been your best day as a geoscientist?
You guys know me. I'm going to have a few of them. All right. So,
okay. Sit down, get another drink. So, you know.
So here's the thing. So the first one was before I was a geoscientist, right? But it was, we touched on this before, it's when I decided I wanted to be a geoscientist. So going back to this, you know, the hike that we did up to Little Devil's Tower when I was 17 years old on the summer science trip, I knew then that this is what I wanted to do. I don't do exactly geology every day anymore or geoscience every day anymore, but I certainly use the tools that I learned through that experience to hopefully be good at what I do now. So that, to me, the view there up there, the way it affected me, I think is one of them. It's probably at the top of the list, but also is the fact that just a few years ago, my two little boys and my wife hiked up to the top of Little Devil's Tower with me at night. And to bring them to the place that really impacted me, you know, at that time was really special too. It's just a cool thing. And then the second one, I think, honestly, like if I'm being totally honest, was 6 years ago when Chris called me. And I remember exactly where I was. Chris doesn't call me often during the day because he knows I'm usually on the phone, right? But he called me at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And I was like, oh, I better answer this, right? So I answered it. I walked over. It was this open office space. We were all in the office. This was before, well before COVID, obviously. I answered it. I said, hey, give me a second. I'm going to walk to the conference room. I walked to the conference room. I stood in the corner of the conference room looking out the windows. The windows are all glass. And he was like, hey, I know you're busy, but I got a quick question for you. And I'm like, okay, what's up? He's like, do you want to teach summer science with me? And I was like, Christopher, I have no idea how I'm ever going to get 3 weeks off of work or how I'm going to be able to do that with my job and with my family. I mean, Jackson, my youngest, was like one. How are we going to make this work? And my answer was, I don't know for sure how we're going to make this work, but yes, I want to do it. And I said, we'll figure it out. So that's number two. And then I think number three for me was, this is the last one, by the way. So number three for me is when I was fairly new in my career at my previous company. One of our senior partners walked up to my desk, same company that, you know, where I took the phone call from Chris, right? Years later, he walked up to me and said, hey, I'm working on the Keystone XL pipeline project and we need some help. And this was like 6 months into my career after my master's, right? And he's like, would you be interested in helping us out? And I was like, wait, like Keystone XL, like the Keystone XL, like the project that we see numerous news articles about, yada, yada. He's like, yeah. My answer was yeah, I'm happy to help, right? And that opportunity from him, and I didn't even report to him at the time. I later did because we were working so closely. But that opportunity that came from him really, I think, catapulted me into my career in terms of leadership and complex projects and managing people. And before I knew it, I was going to Washington, D.C. to meet with the State Department, like what seemed like every other week. It really opened up some doors for me, and I worked my butt off and got lucky in doing so. And that really helped me in my career progression. So that's my long-winded Chris Bolheis-esque answer to your question.
Well, those are three very excellent ones. And I, you know, say yes to opportunities, even if they're a little unsure of what they might be or how it might work. It's great advice. Absolutely.
And you guys, I got to say this real quick. I'm going to cut you off again here, Jess. Sorry. We've known each other since we were like, what, third grade, second grade, something like that.
I don't know. What is that?
Chris.
How old are you in that? 10? How old is an eighth grade, a third grader? I don't even know.
I should know because I have one.
Third grader, eight.
9, 10.
You're eight.
Yeah, whatever.
Okay, there we go.
Anyway, and Chris, we got to know each other, right, when I was a track athlete on your track team. But like, I think that this podcast is just it's just a super cool, you guys can edit this out if you want, but this is just such a cool opportunity for people to get to know you and get to know a little bit more about geology. and also something that's, I think, really powerful that's influenced a lot of people. So you guys know what I think about you, and I think that this podcast is a special thing. And I tell Jesse this, well, I've told you this too, Chris, when I'm traveling for work and I put my earbuds in and I listen to you guys, it feels like I'm hanging out with you, you know? Like, it feels like we're hanging out. And then I get a phone call from one of you, and I'm like, guys, I feel like I've just been talking to you for 2 hours, you know? Like,
oh, man. Yeah, then you don't want to talk to us. When we call, you're like, I don't want to talk to you right now, you know? Yeah. I've just spent 2 hours with you. I'm done. So hurry up.
Yeah. So thanks for having me on. I don't know why it's taken 3 years for me to be on, but thanks for inviting me finally.
I know. Well, thanks for coming on.
To be fair, this right here was good. And this is a good interview. You're awesome. Jesse and I are just really grateful that you agreed to give up some of your time and be on our podcast. It means
a lot. Thanks for coming and giving us an hour and a bit of your time, man. Appreciate it. And always good to talk to you. Always good to see your face.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
We'll see you again soon.
All right. Thanks, man.
Cheers.